listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Do you know that a study was done in the United Kingdom that showed children and adolescents recovered as well from depression when given a placebo as they did when given Prozac? Do you know that the mineral magnesium has been proven to be somewhat of a magic bullet for healthy hearts, more effective than the heart medications used by most doctors? If you, like many people today, suspect that our modern medicine system largely treats symptoms rather than going for cures and is dictated by drug companies rather than by what works and heals the causes of illness, then this show, with my guests Brian Hubbard and Lynn McTaggart, who are editors and producers of the magazine What Doctors Don't Tell You, is a show for you. Welcome to Full Power Living, where we're dedicated to awakening the world to the power and importance of human emotions. You're listening to us on emotionalprose.com's radio show page or blogtalkradio.com/FPL. You can also subscribe through iTunes, and you can chat with me on each of these venues and also call in toll-free to ask questions at 888-498-0570. So we're starting this morning with Lynn McTaggart, who's a best-selling author, researcher, and lecturer. Her work has rightly been described as a bridge between science and spirituality. For the past 20 years, she's been researching medicine and its shortcomings, and also quantum physics and what this means for you and the world we live in. She has many best-selling books, including The Field, The Intention Experiment, and What Doctors Don't Tell You. Lynn is the winner of the Kindred Spirits Annual Awards in 2013 as Spiritual Writer of the Year, and she's been chosen as one of the world's 100 most spiritually influential people by the Watkins Review, published by Watkins Book. She's also been overseeing a range of intention experiments on the web, believed to be the largest mind-over-matter trials ever undertaken. So, here from North London, England, Lynn McTaggart, it's indeed a pleasure and an honor to have you on Full Power Living. Welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be with you.
All right. Well, your own experiences with today's medical world is what brought you and Brian to the idea of launching What Doctors Don't Tell You. And I'd like you to start open by telling us your story.
Well, in the mid-80s, I mean, well before anybody knew what a microbiome was.
Okay, let me interrupt you for just a minute, Lynn. I need you to move a little further back from your microphone because you're blasting it a little bit.
Okay.
Much better. Yes. Would you start
again,
please?
Okay. Are you recording?
We're doing both. This is live and it's recording, but I want to make sure people can hear you well.
Okay, great. So I was, it was in the mid-80s, and it was before anybody knew what a microbiome was, and I suddenly just got really puzzling symptoms. And I'd gone through a bad patch in my life, as people do, we all do at some point, and I'd had, you know, if I took one of those little women's magazines type tests that tests your stress levels, you know, and it has all the important indicators like, you know, divorce, death in the family, bereavement, you know, move. I ticked every single box. And so I suddenly, my body started to fall apart, basically. And I was getting more and more strange symptoms. And I couldn't find anybody who could tell me what was wrong with me. And I went to all the usual doctors and then alternative doctors and then the very outer rim. And before I learned all kinds of things about my relationship with my mother, but I didn't get better in any way. And so I finally realized that if I was going to get better, I was going to have to take charge of this myself. And so I researched what I thought I had, and then I researched and found a nutritional pioneer whom I felt was probably going to be the one to sort me out. And together we worked to get me better for about a year. And it was a very heady experience because as a doctor, he was unlike any other doctor I'd ever known in that he was treating me like a partner, that we were both in this business of getting me well. And I was just so inspired by that experience, and also by the idea that you didn't have to use drugs and the usual techniques of medicine to get you better, that I decided to, well, first of all, I guess I got kind of boring on the subject, and my husband, Brian, my partner at the time, I think really turned to me and said, stop telling me, tell the world. So together we launched this, what was a newsletter in 1989, with the idea that we would help people by helping them take charge of their own health and informing them about the dangers and ineffectiveness of many areas of medicine, and also better and non-drug alternatives. And that's what we've been doing for now 26 years. And we've turned what was that newsletter into an international newsstand magazine.
Right. You're publishing in 9 countries, I note, and you're about to
14 expand. Now. 14.
14. Wow.
Yeah.
And you'll be expanding into the United States market?
Yes. I mean, we have been licensed in the United States, but we were unhappy about how that was being handled, and so we are taking over now ourselves.
Ah. So I'm interested in the comment you made about your doctor treating you like a partner. Many years ago, I was a single parent, and I developed a method for parenting that pretty much I basically tell people when I teach this material that you're partners with your children. So I'm kind of fascinated with it because it seems like that's a direction we may be moving in, that instead of having people do things for us or to us, we become partners and work on things together.
Well, I think that's really important when it comes to health, because up until now there's been a kind of a parent-child relationship between doctors and their patients, where you've been, the doctor tells you what to do and you hustle off and do it. But we're now realizing that, you know, health is a highly individualized thing. It's not about you contracting something that is a very similar situation to lots of other people. You know, that's the medical model now, which is that there are classifiable diseases. But even when it's cancer, even when it's multiple sclerosis, there are unique situations, unique environmental assaults, dietary issues, and your response to them that are individual to you. And so it really requires much more of an individualized approach and much more of your history, and therefore much more of your involvement. We are so biochemically individual. You know, there's new evidence now showing there isn't even one-size-fits-all diet for weight loss. That's, you know, one person's weight loss program is another person's chocolate cake. So we really all need to be partners in this.
Well, my husband has been dealing with prostate cancer for about the last 2 years, and he is a retired doctor. And
mm-hmm.
I go to his appointments.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I go to his appointments with him, and his doctors do take time to talk things through with him. And yet,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking that there, as I was preparing to talk with you, that there are many things still that aren't covered, little surprises that pop up along the way. For example,
yes.
he felt depressed, so one doctor prescribed an antidepressant for him. But this antidepressant made his anxiety worse. And
yes.
in our research, we found out that this particular antidepressant does that, and yet he didn't get a warning, and there was no follow-up scheduled. It was up
well,
to my...
Yes, and that's a very typical situation, because doctors oftentimes aren't even aware of the side effects themselves. That's a very well-known side effect of antidepressants, of many classes of antidepressants, and also anxiety drugs like Valium can cause anxiety. So, you know, the first responsibility, of course, is to talk about that, and he should know that, to talk about it. But secondly, this is another reason why you know, your husband, and all of us need to be informed consumers. We really need to be medical consumers.
Well, my husband figured it out, and he made the necessary changes, and then we told the doctor about it. But I have to say, I'm not medically trained. I'm a social worker, and I thought about what would it be like if I didn't know any, you know, neither of us knew anything about the medications. It would be much, much worse than it was for him.
Absolutely. Imagine if you are like 95% of the people out there who just listen to doctor's orders and the doctor doesn't inform them about side effects. And that's what our mailbag is full of every single day. People who have had calamitous mistakes made or have had terrible reactions to correctly prescribed drugs. And it's only because their doctor didn't know or didn't bother to tell them about some of the issues with those drugs. Mm-hmm. Nor did they know about a lot of the non-drug alternatives that will work far better in dealing with their condition. So that's where we come in.
Now, I don't know how it is where you are in England, but I did feature a doctor from California, which is where I am right now, on this show a few months back, who actually lost his medical license from the California board because he was treating illnesses with hormones and not prescribing medication, and they took it away from him because he wasn't following the protocol.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's very typical. Doctors are, you know, who don't toe the party line are demonized in both countries. I mean, in this country, in the UK where we are, there's a general medical council, and oftentimes doctors who blow the whistle on things. There was a guy called Jeff Bradstreet, who's now deceased, and there was also a guy over here called Andrew Wakefield who first blew the whistle on the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine because as a gastroenterologist, he kept seeing children coming into his office with the same gut problems over and over again, and also autism that had developed when these gut problems had developed, and both of them had come about right after they'd been vaccinated. So he just wrote this up and didn't say the MMR vaccine is terrible, don't ever take it. He was simply providing the truth of what had gone on, and he was so demonized that he ultimately lost his license to practice. So it goes on in both countries. There is a big, you know, there is a lot of undue influence by the drug companies on all of the agencies supposedly taking care of our health. And this is even more reason why you need to be a medical consumer.
Thank you for that. I certainly think that that's so. So with your magazine, What Doctors Don't Tell You, you're offering a service, you're offering information that under most other circumstances would be very difficult to come from. Where do you get your own information on this?
Okay, I'm going to turn you over to Brian, my other editor, who is going to talk to you about where he gets some of his information. She said,
okay,
where do we get our information? Hold on one second.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks, Lynn. Hi, Eileen. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Let me just introduce people,
sure,
you to people.
Please, that'd be lovely.
You have an extensive and versatile background as a journalist, editor, publisher, and author, and you're the owner and managing director of two publishing companies, publisher and co-editor, along with Lynn McTaggart, of the international magazine What Doctors Don't Tell You, that I just learned is being published in 14 countries.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier this year, we interviewed you on IDS from your incredibly powerful book, The Untrue Story of You. So, Brian Hubbard,
great,
welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you.
What a
wonderful introduction. Thank you very much. Sorry, I'm sorry we're sort of flicking around here between Lynn and myself. But anyway, what was the question you wanted answered about
where do you get your information?
Yeah, well, it comes in the main, surprisingly, from the medical literature, because what we're seeing is an enormous gap between medicine as taught in medical school and medicine as practiced in the clinic and the surgery every day, as opposed to the new research which is coming through. And this is coming from prestigious academies and universities such as Harvard, Yale, Cambridge and Oxford here in the UK. And, it's coming up with quite extraordinary results, mainly dealing with nutrition and diet, but other things too, which just isn't getting taught to doctors and it isn't being practiced by doctors. But nonetheless, it's there. And usually it's research that is independently funded. As you probably know, about 60-70% of medical studies are now considered to be fraudulent, that the results have been massaged in order to show a drug, for example, in the best possible light. And it so happens that the trial has been sponsored by the manufacturer. And so, it's very important that we find the independent research that is independently funded from these organizations. And this is where a lot of our stuff comes from. We also have a team of about 18 people on the editorial panel who are always flagging stuff up to us, sending us material that they're aware of or whatever it is. And so that's primarily the source of our material. But, whether it's alternative or whether it's conventional, we're still looking for the evidence for it. And so it's important, if we're going to say that homeopathy or some herb does this, it's just as important as the evidence to support that as there is for any drug treatment as well.
It strikes me, based on how you just stated what you were stating, that our emphasis in medicine has crept over to the side, and if you listen to ads on our televisions anyway, it's crept over to the side of dealing with symptoms rather than cure.
Yeah. Well, that's the model of medicine, isn't it? I mean, it's all to do with treating symptoms. And, that sort of makes sense in a way, because if you're in pain or you have a problem, obviously you want that dealt with because you don't want to be in pain. But what it's doing is suppressing pain. So the receptors in the brain may be switched off in some way, but the actual pain is actually still there. And more to the point, the underlying reason for the pain is still there. So whatever is causing the pain is chronic and is continuing and it's worsening. And so whilst it's good in the immediate term to deal with the symptom, at the same time, you need to take the long view and say, okay, well, what caused that symptom in the first place? And what is going on with me longer term that's caused this to happen? And it's really important that both aspects are dealt with and not just the symptom.
Mm-hmm. Well, also we know, I'm sure this is so in the ads that are placed where you are also, that the side effects from many of the drugs sound much worse than the problem itself.
Well, it can be. And they can, lots of things go on. They can have what is called a paradoxical effect, so that they actually make worse the condition that they're treating. And that happens as well, and the adverse reactions and the side effects can be every bit as bad. Obviously they happen to a minority of people, and we accept that. Of course, that is true. But the trouble is, it does happen, and it's a bit like saying you really do need to wear. Do you use the term seatbelt in the States when you put the seatbelt on? So, we all know we should put our seatbelt on, but a lot of people don't because they think, well, it's never going to happen to me. And I think there's always that mentality going on, that it won't happen to me. But, of course, it does happen to many, many, many hundreds of thousands of people every year who suffer. I mean, we do not record the numbers, Eileen. We don't actually know the extent of the problem because it's far greater than we could ever imagine. We know that 100,000 people die as a direct result of properly prescribed medicine and treatments every year. We know that. That's a fact. The Journal of the American Medical Association itemized that some years back. We don't know the level of harm that's done by drugs. And the reason why we don't necessarily know that is twofold. A, because the patient himself or herself doesn't actually report the problem because they themselves have not made the association. And B, if they do go to the doctor and say, hey, I've had this problem since taking the drug, The doctor looks at his PDR or whatever he looks at and says, well, that's not listed as a side effect of this drug, so I think something else must be going on. And so for that reason, often harms are not reported. And it's quite the French did a study years ago, and it's quite alarming. They reckoned, and I don't know how true this is, it was one study, but they reckoned that only one in 60,000 side effects is ever reported. Isn't that astonishing?
Yes.
I mean, if that really is true, and I think it would be nice to have that verified by another study, but if that were true, I mean, it is catastrophic what's going on. But, you know, I'd like to think it isn't quite that bad, but if it's even, you know, 10 times worse than it's actually being reported, it's still pretty bad. And then I think we do need to really be told this a lot more and understand the real side effects and harms that medicine can do.
Yes, thank you. Well, we're up to our first break right now.
Mm-hmm.
My guests are Brian. When we come back, Brian, I want to talk about what you've learned about whether there are significant differences in medical care in different countries now that you're publishing
okay.
in different countries.
All right, okay, okay.
Right. So I'm talking right now with Brian Hubbard and previously with Lynn McTaggart, who are publishers of What Doctors Don't Tell You, and we'll have more when we return right here on Full Power Living.
Parent, have you found all the parenting information you've been hearing lately a bit confusing? Are you having trouble sorting out the best response to your defiant child, or feeling hopeless about regaining respect from your teen, or determining whether your actions as a parent are the right ones? Instead of the usual pressures of parenting that you've been experiencing, you can partner with your child, raising incredible kids who are destined to become amazing adults. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, giving you the opportunity to become the incredible parent for incredible kids. We have the method and the tools. You bring your optimism for learning and the kids. Raise Incredible Kids offers a comprehensive system for raising kids who are responsible, make their own great decisions, and become immune to peer pressure. To get you ready for this new era in parenting, get my free 10-page report, Incredible Communication That Helps You Create Incredible Kids, by visiting RaiseIncredibleKids.com now. That's RaiseIncredibleKids.com.
Welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Please sign up now at emotionalpro.com to be on our mailing list. We send out a twice-weekly newsletter. Next week, I'm talking with returning guest Carolyn Hobbs on self-compassion and compassionate listening. These are two skills important all the time, yet they might be particularly important during the holiday season. Think about what you say to yourself when you make mistakes. If you're not as gentle and kind to yourself as you'd like, please listen. That's 9 a.m. Pacific time next Thursday, December 17th. And while you're on the Emotional Pro homepage, get a copy of my free list of the signals of 7 everyday emotions. Those will help you immediately to start moving toward mastery over the emotions that come up in your life. And thank you for helping us with our mission of transforming our world through the mastery and power of human emotions. Now, we've been talking with Brian Hubbard, who's a co-publisher of What Doctors Don't Tell You. And Brian, some months back, I interviewed Dr. Stephen Street, who's an internal medicine doctor from New Zealand. And in so doing, I discovered that medicine there is much more in the hands of the doctors. There's far less choice for patients. And it led me to wonder, as you're publishing in 14 different countries now, have you noted significant differences in the medical care in different countries?
Yeah, we have. It's quite interesting. I mean, the first thing to say that medicine to me is much more of an art and an aspect of culture than it is of science. And for example, in Germany, homeopathy is considered to be a legitimate tool that conventional doctors will also reach out and use, as they do to a lesser extent in France, but they'll still use it, which is quite interesting. In the UK, by comparison, say, to the States, where we have the National Health Service, which means that that's money taken directly out of the taxpayer's purse, you know, we find a more conservative form of medicine going on, where they are less prepared to immediately go for that test or the surgery or whatever it might be. And, you know, that can have its pluses and minuses, I'm sure, but, you know, that's quite different from a very interventionist, very aggressive form of medicine that's practiced in the States, where the insurer, of course, picks up the tab, or maybe in some way, shape, or form. So there are cultural aspects which are quite interesting, and yet, you know, they all seem to work to some extent, but can actually be quite different one from another. Certainly what is the case is that, to be honest with you, we still find pretty much everywhere what you just said about the New Zealand doctor, that, you know, the doctor pretty much calls the shots pretty much everywhere. I think that the concern we have, it's an issue that we have raised, and I think it's more of an issue in the States as well, is that of informed consent, which should really put the patient very much on the same level as the doctor. And that we certainly do not see that happening. I don't think that a patient, although consents to treatment, is ever really informed when agreeing to treatment. And I think that is still a major issue. Yeah. And also touches back on the point we were making before the break, Eileen, about the side effects of drugs. Because, you know, in determining whether or not you want to have that treatment, you do need to understand, well, what can happen? What can go wrong? You know, and that's an aspect of informed consent. But so too, and this is very much part of European law now, not just the UK, is that, now this doesn't happen either, but it's in law, is that the doctor is supposed to suggest other treatments up to and including alternative treatments if he feels that there is some validity to them. And again, this is most certainly not happening. I doubt very much if it's happening in the States. But that is actually the full spectrum of informed consent, and I still wait for that day to happen.
Mm. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I think that, yeah, the other point I wanted to talk about is, you know, part of all of this is also about, instead of us, you know, going back to our New Zealand friend where the doctor calls the shots, you know, I think the patient does need to move up the spectrum and also be more responsible. I read a report today that said we are, for the first time in human history, non-communicable diseases are now outstripping infectious diseases. And it's the first time in history where we are now, where non-communicable diseases, by which we would include cancer and heart disease, are now killing more people than infectious diseases are. And what that means is that an awful lot of disease actually is in our hands. So many cancers and virtually all of heart disease are reflections of lifestyle. And there's stuff we can do about this. And that is now the number one killer in the world, you know. And it's once upon a time it was all about infection. And this is, of course, the great thing about the rise of medicine. Modern medicine was to counter primarily infectious disease, you know, and which it did to some extent quite well through inoculation and general treatment. But, you know, it's now that day has passed. So we've moved over to chronic disease, which is, in the main, preventable, you know. And so that incredible shift has occurred. And for that, and that means it, that also means a shift in the mindset of the patient, because we don't necessarily have to go to the doctor anymore just to give us the magic pill to sort us out because something awful has happened to us through which we've had no control and it's no fault of our own. Now, actually, we are part and parcel of the disease process far more than we ever were. We haven't just caught something. we've given ourselves something in the main, and we have to be, you know, become much more aware of that, become more aware of good food and bad food, of the right way to live and the wrong way to live. And, you know, we have to play an active role in our own health going forward, I think.
That seems to be the magic message in almost all of life these days, that it's time for us to step back in and take control. I wanted to just mention, I was sharing with Lynn McTaggart that my husband is ill with cancer, and I go to the appointments and such with him. And I've had an interesting experience where doctors, because my husband is a doctor, a retired doctor, they assume that I know what he knows. And the other part is that they use little phrases like, let's wait and see, and let's monitor that. And I've taken to saying to people, okay, you're trained in medicine, my husband's trained in medicine, the doctor's trained in medicine, but I am not trained in medicine, and I don't know what that means. So will you tell me exactly what it means? And they will, well, but it takes a lot for me to push them like that.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. And you feel like you should be part of that without necessarily having to demand that as well. And of course, you know, and most people, you know, don't have your boldness, Eileen. They just take it and say, oh, okay, then we'll wait and see, or whatever it is they say to you.
I tried that.
You know, they say, well, you're like that. Well, it's good. Everyone should be like that. But people in the main aren't, and they just say, oh, okay. And they don't really understand what has been said to them. They don't really understand, well, how is this treatment going to unfold? What is going to happen to me? They don't really know, because they just think, well, the doctor knows, and he's important, and he knows what he's doing, and they leave it at that. You know, and so therefore the patient, I mean, it's not true in your husband's case, because obviously he does know what's being said and what's going on, but in the main, people don't have that medical background, so the patient becomes passive. You know, and there's been a lot of studies as well that have demonstrated that it is the active patient who takes part in all of this and in their recovery who actually is more likely to get well. You know, so that's really important too. But the problem is that, you know, we're seeing this, we're going through quite a transition period, aren't we, in the world, where it isn't just with doctors, but we're seeing it across the board in terms of law and all sorts of areas where the expert is increasingly being challenged. And I think that's a good thing,
too.
You know?
And you know, I have a question about that. Can I move into that question?
Sure.
Okay, so 20 years ago, I married an American neurosurgeon, and prior to that time, I was a dedicated alternative medicine person, and I still am. I jokingly told my husband when I first met him that I'd spent most of my adult life trying to stay away from people like him. But
opposites do attract, don't they, Eileen, you see?
They do. Well, it's been very interesting, and I've been pulled more into the medical world, and I learned how much doctors are required to learn, how dedicated they are to helping people, and how hard they work. But and I also have gone to some medical conferences, and what I'm seeing, now my husband is retired, but in California in those 20 years, a large portion of specialists like neurosurgeons are no longer practicing. They've gone to get other degrees, they've retired, they've moved to other states, and so we have fewer specialists. And as I'm watching, and in the meantime now, say he's a surgeon, we've developed less invasive surgical procedures, things we can do without doing surgery. And it strikes me, as you're talking about it, that we're in the midst of an enormous transformation. And what has to happen before transformation, as you and I have discussed on the other program, is you have to have a breakdown first. And that we seem to be doing a bit.
It does have to break down. I mean, we're seeing this very, very starkly in the UK, and I don't know how much news you get about the National Health Service over in the States, but, I mean, it is close to breakdown point because, you know, until we shift across where the patient takes more responsibility, becomes more aware of what disease is, we are only ever going to carry on increasing the load of chronic disease. And if you also have a medical model that treats the symptoms rather than the underlying disease, all you're doing is building up the side of the mountain. The mountain is going to get bigger and bigger because no one is being cured. But more and more people are being treated. You know, and we've just reached crisis point in the UK over this. And it may well be something similar is happening in the States. I don't know. But if it is, maybe it's better hidden. But I think you've got that going on. I mean, in the UK, we've got this incredible phenomenon. You said about these specialists moving out. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing in the UK is a lot of early retirement, even alcoholism in the medical profession, because I think that the general load is getting greater, and it's enormous pressure on these people. And you know, we although the title sounds like it's very anti-doctor, it's not really. It's just anti the tools they work with. And you know, we do recognise doctors are, you know, remarkable human beings who are doing phenomenal work. We accept that, but we do question the tools. And you know, and as I say, it is only getting worse, and it will only get worse because until we look upon, well, what are the food we're eating? What is this processed food we're eating? Which, when the high sugar levels of this food, that alone has an incredible role to play in contributing to the rise of chronic disease. That one thing on its own has enormous consequence for us. And, you know, we're only just beginning to see that now and beginning to deal with it. So I'm not surprised that specialists are moving off the scene. You know, it's an incredible job that has to be done.
Right.
And it's a societal job, Eileen. It's not just saying over to the doctor. I mean, we all have a part to play, whether it's a politician or a food manufacturer or people who regulate food through to the citizen who eats the food, right the way across the spectrum. You know, we need mm-hmm. to start taking that responsibility and learning and becoming informed. You know, and that's one of the functions of What Doctors Don't Tell You, that it makes the consumer and more intelligent about this stuff, because he has to be, you know.
Mhm. Mhm. Well, and I would add to the list that, or to your interest in nutrition, two other things: stress and the high mm-hmm. adrenaline levels we carry,
mm-hmm.
and
absolutely
my field of emotions. When people mm-hmm. hold emotions inside, they build, and they mm-hmm. anger in particular, mm-hmm. Held on too long enough,
yeah.
can actually kill
yeah.
you. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's again interesting area, Eileen. There's so much work again on the role and function of stress and its impact on the physical body. I mean, it's just enormous. And it isn't just heart disease, and people think of just heart, but it's not. It's, you know, some cancers have been proven to be stress related to some extent. I mean, you know, it does go on and on. So
mm-hmm.
you know, you're absolutely right. And so that's another aspect of modern living that we're paying the price for, you know,
yes.
from easy, convenience foods through to the high tempo lives that we lead and the burdens we put on ourselves in terms of our responsibilities, and all these things are certainly contributing to that.
Yes, and as you and I discussed when you were on the show before, mm. Life, our lives, and the choices mm. we make, these are mm. ways we have of sort of backing ourselves into a corner, so
mm.
the pain
mm.
is strong enough that mm. we'll look at things, and this seems to be what's happening here.
It has to be, as you say, it has to be a catastrophe before that happens, doesn't it?
Right, unfortunately. Well, we're up to our second break right now, and perhaps after the break, Brian, I could talk with Lynn. I don't know which of you is better here, but I want to talk about some of the feedback you've gotten from your readers and how your publication has actually helped them when mm-hmm. we return here on Full Power Living.
Okay.
Difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you, Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. In case you're just joining us, I'm talking today with authors, philosophers, researchers, and publishers, husband and wife Lynn McTaggart and Brian Hubbard, about just one of their publishing efforts, the magazine What Doctors Don't Tell You. And you can find that on the web under www.wddty.com. That stands for What Doctors Don't Tell You.com. wddty.com. So, Lynn, you're back with us.
No, sorry, it's Brian. I'm sorry, still
it's
Brian.
Brian, it's you again.
I beg your pardon. Yeah, sorry.
I'm sorry. Okay, well, you'll do.
I'll have to, sorry.
So, before the break, I was saying that I'm sure you've gotten feedback from your readers, and I wanted to hear a story or two that you may recall about how what you're doing has impacted your readers.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite funny. I mean, I don't know, with the work you do as well, Eileen, it's oftentimes you don't get to hear about stuff that you're doing this stuff, and no one actually bothers to tell you. actually, you know, you've really helped me. You've really changed my life. And people never quite get around to doing that, except there was an occasion a year or so back. We were holding a conference in London. I can't even recall the subject. I think it was about cancer. Anyway, we came to the first break, and this guy came up to us, and he said, Brian, Lynn, I just wanted to thank you. I said, well, great. Well, the conference has only just started, really. He said, no. He says, I couldn't care two hoots about cancer. He said, I'm here to thank you for some information you gave me, which got me out of a wheelchair. And he said, that's why I'm here today. And he said that if it hadn't been for you, he said I would have been a complete invalid, but now I cycle everywhere, and as you can see, I'm on two legs, and I've travelled by train many miles to be here today. He said, and I feel that in order to, I don't know, maybe restore some sort of karmic balance, I don't know, but he said I just want to shake you by the hand and say thank you, because I just feel I should. And, you know, that was a real heartwarming story. But, you know, we were in the House of Commons for a thing, and this practitioner came up to us. And he says, you do know, he said, don't you, that you have changed and saved the lives of thousands of people. And I thought, well, thank you for telling me that, because actually I didn't. So that was that was encouraging, but it does go on all the time. And I just think that people with a busy life, don't bother telling you. But we do have, you know, people do write in and thank us and what you will, and that does happen a lot. But that was a real nice, you know, human story where this guy turned up at the conference just to say, you know, thank you.
Yes.
Because what we try to do, Eileen, is obviously we point out stuff to people, but what we try to also give people the science behind it and the references and all the stuff. So what we say is supported. And when it's supported like that, it's not us saying it, or we don't have a particular hat to wear, if you like, but it is stuff that's out there that's been scientifically validated. And this gives people confidence that this is stuff that actually could work for them. And that's the big difference. And that's a really important thing, because we are, you know, we're researchers and we're journalists. As, you know, your lovely introduction pointed out, which is good in the sense that we're not, you know, nutritionists, or we're not herbalists or what you will. So we don't necessarily see everything through that one spectrum of, you know, our own discipline.
Yeah.
You know, we are general researchers, and we say, well, if this is there something that could be done for problem X, you know? And so we look and be open-minded about this. I mean, obviously, and the point of what doctors is looking beyond the conventional medical paradigm to see if there is anything more that can be done for people. And that's, you know, that's where the science becomes very important, because otherwise it's just opinion. And
mm-hmm.
when you're dealing with people's health, and especially if they have a serious condition, you know, they do need more than just opinion. So we try
right.
to provide that spectrum of possibility for them, and you know, that's the main function of what doctors, I guess. So yeah, and as I say, I mean, I wish I could say that thousands of case studies and report every single one to you. There are quite a number, but as I say, I think people get up with their lies anyway, but I don't always tell it. Never mind.
that happens here on this show too.
Yeah,
let me
I'm sure it does.
Let me give you a testimonial just from the from my research on this. I went in and I looked at your magazine online, and I found an article that was relevant for a neighbor of mine. She has a 14-year-old daughter who
yeah.
has been put into psychotherapy, and I spoke
right.
with her a week or so ago, and she was furious that the therapist only wanted to put her child on drugs rather
right.
than work with her. And
sure.
I found that article that said that there'd been research done that showed the placebo was as effective as the Prozac, and I
mm-hmm.
passed that on to her, and
mm-hmm.
it was very encouraging to her, and it mm-hmm. gave her something to talk to the therapist with.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that
and that sort of empowers the patient to say, look,
yeah.
I'm sure you've read the New England Journal of Medicine study into this, but let me remind you, it was printed in 2012, and this is what it said. I mean, that gives the patient an enormous amount of power to say, look, let's look at this. Let's work as partners. I'm not trying to demean you or diminish your work as a doctor, but, you know, I do know stuff too, and I would like to do this on a partnership basis to help my daughter or whatever it might be. And, you know, I think that's what we were saying earlier, Eileen, the importance that the patient does, you know, assume that role more and more. Because, you know, and these things, I mean, and furthermore with things like Ritalin, we know for a fact that if they have any effect at all, their effect only lasts for something like 60 days. And thereafter, any effect truly is placebo. So that's important. And yet children we see are on these drugs for years and years and years. And yeah, and yet any efficacy is gone within 60 days. Yeah, and I think that it's important that people know this and
mm-hmm.
say, because the doctor you see just needs to get, you know, he's seeing 50 patients a day or whatever he's doing. He just needs to get him out of the surgery and say, well, take this drug. And the drug's doing that work for him without really digging deeper, you know. And that's
mm-hmm.
really why the patient has to take that interest themselves, because the
mm-hmm.
doctor never will.
Well, sadly, just as a note about that, not too many months ago, 3 or 4 months ago, there was a big expose in our local paper about the fact that foster children here in the state of California are drugged from early on.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Massive levels of drugs, and we've now got...
Yeah.
Bill
yeah.
in our legislature to not allow foster children to be drugged under
right.
most circumstances.
But
so,
I mean, it's not just foster children. It's our
I know.
Children.
I know.
I mean, it is shocking. I mean, it's now, I think it's, I can't remember exactly, I think it's something like 1 in 10 American children are now taking some drug for ADHD or some such thing. I mean, that's a really scary number, isn't it? And, you know, and I just think this is so wrong. It has to be wrong. Why, you know, have we really suddenly developed an epidemic of ADHD or autism? I mean, surely not. And so, you know, I just feel that this is a simple way of just trying to push a problem out of the way, you know, without really dealing with what's going on here. And I think, you know, you can weep over this sort of stuff.
Well,
and the
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you must see that a lot in your work, Eileen. But,
yes,
you know,
some
years ago, the manufacturers of these ADHD drugs, we got hold of the secret memo, which said we now need to push cells much higher. And their job was to just get all the sales guys to go out to see the doctors and to encourage them to prescribe more and more of these drugs. It was a conscious effort by the manufacturers to do this, and it worked to treat. It really did. But, you know, I think that unlike a lot of industries, you know, there are victims in medicine, and it's our children, and it's our husbands and our wives, and it's, you know, for an industry, which is what the pharmaceutical industry is, it's just not acceptable. It really isn't. And I just feel that they need to, you know, we need to have this conversation. You know, and I'm not saying necessarily stop all drugs, but they need to be taken very judiciously. And they don't, they're not needed anywhere near the amount that they're given. And, you know, Ritalin and drugs like that are one example of that.
Well, certainly, I think in my lifetime I could have been offered drugs, but about a week and a half ago I celebrated my 73rd birthday, and I don't do drugs of any of any kind. And when when people start pushing, I mean, I haven't had an antibiotic in 35 years, for example.
Right.
And when people start pushing drugs in my direction, I just go, no, my system is pure. It's dealing well with what's going on. I'm healthy.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, the body's pretty smart, isn't it?
It is.
As long as you treat it well and you give it proper nutrition, enough liquid, and proper air and lots of exercise, I mean, it can function remarkably well.
Yeah.
And as long as the immune system is supported, it's going to cope with pretty much everything that's thrown at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, to my advantage, and this supports what you've been saying, I was a single parent for 20 years, and I was self-supporting. I didn't have help, and I couldn't afford medical insurance. And
right.
So that's how I got involved with alternative methods. I wanted to keep myself and my children healthy,
and
I was able to do that.
Right. Well, you know, I'm not a million miles behind you in terms of age, and people are shocked that I don't have a doctor. I don't have a doctor. Whereas I haven't signed up with anybody. There's no doctor I could go to. And they're horrified by this. They feel like, you know, it's been like being like on a high wire without a net. And I said, well, no, because if something really serious happened to me, like I sliced a finger or something like that, I was an acute problem like a heart attack, you know, I'm not going to line up at the doctor's surgery. I'm going to go straight to A&E to be treated. So I would circumvent the doctor at that point anyway. So if it's not an acute situation, life and death, then it's chronic. And if it's chronic, the doctor really has little to offer me. And that's how I see it, you know. Because it's just going to be another tablet. And I know that's not the answer if it were a chronic condition.
But I do know that your work has brought you into contact with innovators and trendsetters in the healing world, like Dr. Eric Pearl, for example, who teaches reconnective healing. This has kind of put you and Lynn with your fingers on the pulse of innovation and change in the field of medicine, has it not?
Yeah, I guess it has. I mean, it's right across the spectrum. There's Eric there who's doing this extraordinary stuff, and which it's hard to explain what is going on, and I'm not sure Eric can either, really. But there's something going on there. right the way through to, you know, just good nutrition or whatever it might be. And people who are really at the cutting edge of stuff, who've really figured a lot of stuff out, who've been good medical detectives and have helped people get well in most interesting, strange ways. I mean, one of our panel members, he worked out that a woman's arthritis was actually being caused by the gas oven in her flat, in her apartment.
Mm.
And he said, well, get rid of this and your arthritis will go. You said, well, arthritis and gas ovens? What the heck? She did it. And true enough, her arthritis went away. You know, it's stuff like that that's going on, which is so fascinating. Whereas if she'd gone to a standard-issue doctor, arthritis, well, that's a deteriorating chronic condition. All we can do is give you painkillers, and eventually when the joint wears out, we'll replace the joint, and that's what you got to look forward to. But instead of that, just looking at these other things. I mean, obviously with things like arthritis, I mean, that can be treated anyway. I mean, I had an old lady knock on my door. So I said, God, you're walking terribly. What's wrong with you? She said, I've got this terrible arthritis of the knee. I said, well, look, get rid of your nightshades first and let's see how you get on. And I gave her, so she got all the nightshades out of her diet, and within 6 weeks, she walked up our drive without a problem. I said, that, there you go. I must confess, I was a bit surprised by that myself. But, you know, it's stuff like that that you can be doing, and people aren't being told this stuff, you know?
Right.
So that's the exciting thing. And it's great to see people, you know, improve in front of your eyes almost, you know, with these different things. I mean, our own, I'll tell you one quick story again. I mean, is that we have our own person who works for us here. And his diet was appalling. He was eating all the wrong things, and he was drinking Diet Coke and all the rest of it. And he'd been diagnosed with diabetes. And he was quite a way down the scale, and he really freaked him out, you know, and he didn't know what to do. And I said, well, I'll tell you what to do. You change your diet dramatically right here and right now. And he actually did. He was so frightened.
Wonderful.
by the diagnosis. And within a month, he had to go back for another checkup, and he had more blood tests. The doctor fell off her chair. She says, what's happened to you? You don't have diabetes. And she said, well, I changed everything about my diet. And she said, that's incredible. She said, you must tell me more. My uncle has diabetes, and I'd love to know what you did. And you think, well, this is, you know, this particular one, diabetes and diet is pretty well known. And yet, why didn't the doctor realize this and do more about it? And you just wonder sometimes.
Well, the good news is that she was open to learning from him. I appreciate that. You know,
yeah.
As usual, Brian, I could talk with you forever, but I can't.
Okay. I know. Well, there we go. Can I just quickly say, Eileen, can I just make one quick plug? We're launching What Doctors Don't Tell You in America as of March next year. And it's going to be a monthly magazine, and we're going to be selling it in Barnes & Noble and Whole Foods and everywhere else. So, you know, look out for it, guys, and do buy a copy when you see it, because I think you'll enjoy it. So that's my plug. Thank you.
Great. And in the meantime, they can check out some of the things at WDTY.com.
They that's can indeed, Eileen.
Yes. So indeed. Please pass on to Lynn our thanks. It's been a rich experience to talk with both of you, Brian. And
thank you, Eileen.
Thank you for all the work you do to help other people.
I really appreciate it. Blessings to you, and we'd like to wish you a very happy Christmas to you and all your listeners. And
I really wish
your husband a full speedy recovery, and I hope he's well in every way in the new year.
I would like that too. Maybe he'll get well
for
his birthday in January. That would be good.
There we are. Let's work for that. Okay, very good.
Thank you,
okay.
Brian. Thanks for being on Full Power Living. All right.
Okay.
So join.
You're welcome.
Join us every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, for more powerful experiences on Full Power Living. And remember, next week we're talking about self-compassion and compassionate listening with Carolyn Hobbs, December 17th. Please join us for this show. Paul Johnston of Fresh Talk Media and I have been co-producers for today's show. Thank you, Paul, for teaching me everything you know. I'm just about to catch up. Anyway, for now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.